Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
Hey everybody, what is up? Chad Wesley Smith here, another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. I'm joined as always by Merrific Max Montana. How you doing, buddy?
Doing pretty well. How you doing?
I'm good. And we are here in New Jersey with the man, Joe DeFranco.
What's up, guys?
Joe, thank you very much for joining us today.
It's good to see you, man. It's been a while.
It has. I think probably a couple of years since I've been out here.
You were right before I left our big main gym and we moved to Texas for a little while. You were at that gym like maybe a month before I left. You saw the shrine before we shut it down.
Well, so we'll get into that, into my different trips here a bit more. Today's podcast is brought to you by Trap Bar Deads and Guido Meatheads. It's a lifestyle.
Well played, sir. I like it.
I first came out here, I think it was the summer of 2008. I was going into my senior year of college, and I was here visiting my brother who lives in the city, and I was getting ready for my track season and stuff, and you know, I'd been coaching high school football and doing that and running the off season, and it was like a fucking religious pilgrimage for me to go and rent. You know, I rented this car and I'm driving to New Jersey from Manhattan. And I remember I'm like filming shit out the window. I was like trying to make a YouTube
video. I remember you did make a video out of it. Yeah, I remember it.
And I'm bummed on the video now because it had some like audio copyright, so it doesn't have any sound, and I don't have the original footage for it. But so I got to come out here and train, and it was just you and me at your
second gym.
Yeah, not the original, like the storage closet.
It wasn't
the
storage closet, and not the big one. It was the in between.
Yeah, but probably, you know, in my memory and kind of timeline of things, like this is when you were really becoming more well known and your YouTube stuff was getting bigger and you're doing the DVDs and all that, but yeah, it truly, like, I mean, for weeks leading up to it, I was like, guys, I'm going to DeFranco's. and most of my friends are not really lifters and stuff. They're in like law school and they're like, yeah, we don't give a shit, Chad. Like, And I'm like, no, watch these guys lift this weights. Watch this documentary. Yeah. Why don't you think this is cool?
Not everybody's like us.
Yeah.
But to your credit, you came in and you had a hell of a day. I remember you like broke freaking like three records on the record board. That was right when we started getting people traveling from other countries and other states to come train. So I wouldn't know who would show up. So people would call. The internet wasn't as big where you could just Google somebody's name and see their whole life.
Yeah,
so
you couldn't find an Instagram page or something.
Exactly. Yeah. It was like, oh, another athlete that's pretty good. So I think he's a track and field guy. He's coming to train. And then you like lifted the entire weight room. I was like, holy shit. So it's a very good showing, I remember. That was cool.
And
to see how far you've come, it's very cool for me too.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I did cambered bar box squats to a foam box. The internet is not... there's a lot of archival West Side type of footage that people could find blackmail material of me.
There's stuff out there.
Yeah, so as I was there, you know, going into my senior year of college, I knew that doing what you do, or you know, what you did then and what you do now, was something I was really interested in. And I'm not one who goes in for, you know, motivation, inspiration type of stuff. I find a lot of that very contrived, kind of, but I can very genuinely say that what Juggernaut is now and starting in 2009 was hugely influenced by you, by that trip, by the whole thing. So thank you very much.
That's cool. Thank you for saying that. That means a lot. That's why I did and do what I do. Yeah. It's like, you know, to try to, now that I'm getting older, to see guys like you that were kind of coming up early 20s. Like, I have kids that I trained that were in high school, that I trained through high school, college. Some played in the NFL for a little while, and now they're retired with kids and have their own gym. It's just like, it's very cool to see that. That, you know, means as much to me as watching somebody, you know, having a client that plays in the NFL or fights in the UFC, like those type of stories of guys like you and kids I trained that now kind of followed my career path and they're making a living and like feeding their family because of it. You, not too many people could say they make a living having that kind of an effect on other people. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, thank you for sharing that. That means a lot.
I mean, I probably contributed a good quarter of those YouTube views, and I was like, when's he gonna put a new article up? When is he gonna put a new?
I should have stuck with it, man. I could have been a big YouTuber these days. Yeah. Now all the young guys are passing me up.
Yeah, I had the Combine DVD and the Strong documentary thing, and
weren't you gonna come and train for the Combine?
Yeah.
So, I always wanted to ask you, now that I know you and seeing what you're doing, did you want to legitimately, were you going to legitimately try to play football, or was it more of a, let me go train because I know this is what I want to do, so let me just go train with those guys, and more for the experience to someday open up your own gym?
Yeah, definitely more for the experience. And I ended up not doing that because I had a pec injury. And I was like, oh, I don't want to pay a bunch of money to go to, you know, across the country and not be able to do all the stuff.
Yeah.
But I did train my first combine guy that year, so it was the first time I came out here was summer going into my senior year of college. That would have been the winter, or like, you know, January or whatever of my senior year. But that spring I did my first combine coaching, and just one guy, a local D2 guy. And I ended up doing a lot of the training with him, kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he was just doing a free agent combine. I was like, oh, maybe I'll jump into this kind of. Just,
yeah, use that time.
Yeah, you know, see what happens. But it ended up being kind of that the track season was going so well. I was like, free agent combine, you know, the week before my conference championships for track, maybe not the best strategy. So I decided to just, you know, throw the shot put instead. But I remember that. And like my parents said, like, bought me the plane ticket out here for Christmas that year, and
that was your Christmas present. Yeah, yeah, so like that's so true.
How big of a deal this stuff was to me. So yeah, I want to talk some more about sort of the evolution of your business from, you know, storage closet to now. So we'll take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Joe DeFranco to talk about the evolution of his gym, his business, both here brick and mortar and online, as well as some of his ideas about training. So we'll be back with Joe DeFranco on The Jug Life. The Jug Life is proud to be sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like powerlifters, weightlifters, and CrossFitters get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/juglife to support the show and see if you qualify. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people, including powerlifters, weightlifters, and CrossFitters. 56% of Health IQ customers save between 4 and 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ. Health IQ can save our customers up to 33% because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. Learn more and get a free quote at healthiq.com/juglife. That's to see if you qualify and get your free quote at healthiq.com/juglife, or mention the promo code JUGLIFE when you talk to a Health IQ agent. All right, so we're back on the Jug Life podcast, joined by Joe DeFranco. And so we are in the fourth iteration of DeFranco's gym here.
Fifth if you count the when we shared the facility with Onnit in Texas. Yeah. This would be number 5.
All right, so 4 in New Jersey, 5 overall.
Yes.
So the kind of quick rundown, and you're wearing the shirt,
15 years.
Started in a storage closet.
Yes.
And now we here.
Yes. Kind of full circle in a slightly bigger storage closet. Yeah. It's the quick rundown for people who maybe don't know my deal. I worked for someone else for 5 years. I worked at the Parisi Speed School, which was like the only athletic training gym around at the time. I think now, you know, people coming up, they don't realize there's on every street corner, there's a CrossFit gym, a sports performance coach, where back then it was Gold's Gym and bodybuilding type gyms. At the time, I'm working at Parisi's, which was the only sports performance facility, and learned a lot, got a lot of experience there, got to train with many different athletes, starting from 7 years old all the way to professionals. Was there for 5 years, started the combine program there, got a ton of experience, and then we had a little bit of a falling out, so I decided to start on my own. But like most in our industry, as you know, you don't make a ton of money as a personal trainer working at, you know, at a gym. So I didn't have much money, so I was trying to figure out ways, how can I, what am I going to do? Where am I going to train people? I was meeting people at their house. I was meeting them at gyms, but a lot of gyms didn't like you coming in and using their gym. So long story short, the gym that I trained at when I was in college, when I would come home for breaks, I had gotten to know the owner real well there because I was like a staple at that gym. You know, the meathead that I was there twice a day whenever I was home on break. I went to him, told him the situation, and he was like, hey, I don't know. I know you do a lot of different type of stuff. You don't use a lot of the just normal equipment like lat pull downs and leg presses we have in here. I have a storage closet. You've probably never even seen it, but in that little hallway downstairs, you walk a couple feet, there's a room, and I just have a bunch of old equipment and junk that I haven't used for years. And there's cobwebs in there. If you want to clean that out, I'll rent it to you. So he takes me downstairs, he opens up the door, and to me, it was just like heaven opened up. It was as big as this room.
Yeah.
500 square feet, cobwebs, old desks and old pieces of equipment. And he said, it's yours. You could, if you want to buy some of your own equipment, this could be like your home base. And then if you want, you could still use the general equipment out in the gym. So I was like, sold, done. Yeah. And took a week, cleaned that out, painted it, ordered on my credit card. I ordered about $10,000 worth of equipment from Elite, and just, I didn't have any money to pay for it, but I first gotten a credit card with I think I had a $10,000 limit on it, and I spent like $9,988 on
get the
equipment.
Card on Monday. It's maxed out Tuesday.
It's maxed out on Tuesday, exactly. And three or four pieces of equipment, and it just started training people that way. And about 3 years, grew out of that, went into the gym that you first trained at, which was the first one that I could truly call my own. Mm-hmm. 3 years there, it was always that 3 year mark where I kind of, you know, thankfully steadily grew. Went into what most people remember DeFranco's as, our kind of the mega facility that was the 5,000 square feet with the turf, and that was our kind of marquee facility. Then we could talk about why, but I moved to Texas, shared a facility with Onnit. At that time, Cameron Joss, who is here with us now, he went and ran that facility. I wanted just a home base to shoot some YouTube videos and shoot my online content. So I stumbled upon the facility we're sitting in now, which was perfect for what I was looking for. It's got an office and another office I made into a little podcast studio, kind of room for me to just get away and read and catch up on more online work. And then it's got a small 800 to 1,000 square foot gym out there, and that's where I was. This was just kind of like my personal gym, YouTube studio for our online content. And then 2 years in Texas, Cameron ended up moving back to New Jersey, so now he's training some athletes out of here as well. So it's kind of gone full circle as far as the personal training aspect of the DeFranco brand. It's back into a very small, focused facility.
How many people did you start that first place with, that closet? I mean,
that was just myself. I did everything myself.
No, I mean
myself.
Like clients you have.
Clients,
actual
I was.
Guys you're training.
I probably, at the time I was doing group, I started with one-on-one until I maxed out and had an appointment every hour, from 8 in the morning until 10 at night. And then I went to partner strength training and added one person to every group. So, I mean, I probably had 50 to 75 clients that I was just training myself out of there. But, you know, coming four times a week. So my schedule was packed nonstop. After a year, I hired another trainer. And then a year after that, another trainer. So we at one point we had three full-time trainers in the storage closet training three athletes each. I mean, it was packed in there, and which is one some business advice that I give, which one thing I did right was I waited until like, and we were busting at the seams every hour. And then I moved on to the next facility when I was able to save up money, and it was a necessity. It wasn't like, well, we're starting to get popular, let's go from 500 square feet to 5,000, and then you're in over your head and you don't know what to do. I definitely grew slow facility-wise, 3 years a little bigger, 3 years a little bigger, 3 years a little bigger. And that's one of the few things I did right, I think.
Yeah, that's sure. That's always one of the biggest pieces of advice I give to people, probably because I did it the exact opposite way.
And I do more consulting now, and anyone who's done it I shouldn't say anyone, 99% of people have done it the opposite way. It doesn't work out a lot of times. It's very difficult.
So you started in 2003 in the storage closet. When did you really start to bring in the online content side of your business?
I guess it started shortly after. The thing that helped a lot was it was maybe 2004, 2005 when I put out my first product, which was the VHS tape about how to master the football combine tests. And it became kind of a big deal for not having a huge online presence and social media not being big. I advertised in the an NSCA journal on the inside front cover. That was, I took an ad out, I think, for 2 months, and it started quite a buzz. Like, even at some pro days, the NFL started to change the rules to some of the tests where, like, we used to do a left-handed start for the three-cone drill because it timed up the line touches better. And then I had athletes coming back to me saying, at my pro day, the NFL scout told me he had saw the video, and like, that's now considered cheating. And so I was like, wow, you know, I was a little upset over it because our guys were doing so well, and it's not even cheating. I just taught them how to take the test more efficiently.
Yeah.
But the NFL didn't like some of that stuff. But when they started changing some of the rules, there started to be a little bit of a buzz. And then that's when T Nation had contacted me to do an interview, and they called it the Pro Maker. And it was mainly about how I was, like, you know, helping athletes beat the NFL combine test. And then I told them I'm not just training football players, I train other athletes. And then that led into the West Side for Skinny Bastards program and article, which at one point I think was the most read article on T Nation for a while. And that blew up, and it made me realize, like, man, the online thing, you could just obviously reach so many more people and help so many more people. I'm killing myself in the gym to train eight guys and reach eight lives, you know, in the course of a 15-hour day. I could write an article or post a video, and, you know, it's unlimited. Millions of people worldwide could benefit. And so that's when I started realizing there's something to this, and it turned into more than just because I skipped over, but my first YouTube video was just Mike Wadango did that famous 54-inch box jump that everybody thought he was going to break his skull on the dumbbells behind him. That was for him to, like, show his friends at school. I didn't even know how to work a camera. My girlfriend at the time saw him setting up. I was pissed because I didn't want him. I didn't think he was going to get it. And we used to argue all the time. I'm like, you don't fucking listen. You're not going to get me. You're going to fall back and break your skull, and I'm going to look stupid. I'm telling you right now, I'm against you doing this. Your last set is done. We're moving on to the next exercise. No, I can do it. I can do it. So then my girlfriend at the time was like, oh, I'll videotape it. If he falls, it'll be funny. And if he doesn't, it'll be a cool video. So she videotapes that, makes a YouTube channel for me, puts it up for me. I didn't even know how to put that stuff up at that time. And at that time, I know it's not big now, but, you know, it got like 20,000 or 30,000 views in like a week or two, which was like an astronomical number.
With YouTube inflation, that's probably like 10 million, right?
Yeah, for real.
yeah.
I mean, that.
Yeah, at the time, I don't know, maybe it might be comparable to that, like, at this day and age. You know?
Because I very distinctly remember that. I mean, so many of the different things, you know, I had that I had it on DVD, not VHS, but that video and all this stuff. And it's like, oh, this is a nice trip down memory lane.
It's all cool, you know. And so that's how it started. Then it went from just high school kids wanting to show their friends. Then a kid would come in, and if he was going to PR on a bench press. He would say, hey, can you video for this for me so I could, because my buddy at school isn't going to believe that I benched 315. Yeah, yeah. So I, boom. And then I guess just so naive at the time, you're doing it for this high school kid to show his friend at school and not realizing there's somebody in like Germany watching it and being inspired and wanting to come to New Jersey to train. And then it maybe after a couple months or a year of just being naive and putting that stuff up on YouTube for kids to show their friends. And it got some local business because everybody wanted to come train with the freak high school athletes at the Francos. Then I started getting emails from people like you and people from other countries, rugby players coming from England. And I was like, wow, I don't want to use this just for entertainment purposes or just to show off, you know, high school kids. This could actually help people. And that's when I started doing more instructional videos and talking more and answering questions and doing that type of stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy, you know, one, how the landscape of online fitness has changed because of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that it's not that long ago.
I mean, we're talking like it's forever ago. It was within a decade, ten years.
Yeah, it was 10 years ago when I first came here. And yeah, so probably 12-ish years ago, a lot of these videos you're talking about, like, that's not that long ago.
It's not 100 years.
Yeah, it's such a huge difference. But I definitely went through that exact same realization. Yeah, I'd been running Juggernaut, our first facility, for a year and a half. And then I wrote the Juggernaut Method ebook and, you know, put it out in that first month, you know, however many thousand people bought it. And I was like, whoa, this is like... Yeah. As an educator, and that's really what I see our business as now, as an education business. So as an educator, I was like, however many thousand people read this month, I'm never going to have more than 120, 150 people who walk through the doors of the gym each month. Yeah. So I can reach such a bigger audience. And then at the same time, I was like, I also didn't have to pay rent to sell this.
That's the
thing.
Other big part, the big piece. It's not what you make; it's what you don't spend. Every time I moved into a bigger facility, yes, you could train more athletes now, and you could hire more trainers, but the rent also doubles, and people don't think about that. Business is more about keeping your overhead down than how much money you make.
Yeah.
And people ask me a lot about, you know, the gym business and how to run a gym. And I was like, I don't know that I have any great advice there besides...
Don't.
Yeah,
that's why... Think twice about opening it.
Yeah, and the start small and let it... Yeah. You know, let demand dictate growth. Because the online fitness business and the in-person gym business are so different. Like, it might have the same name. Both of yours might be called DeFranco's Gym and DeFranco's Training. But they are... almost polar opposite and almost to a fault in some situations, because I think there's people who are great at the online part of things and could never do the in-person because they can't actually coach. And I've said this in our stuff before. I think there's online coaches and there's coaches who put stuff online. And
there's way more coaches that put stuff online than real good online coaches.
Yeah. Well, I'm, when I use it, I mean coaches who put stuff online are people like who actually coach.
Oh, yeah.
And decide to share some of it with the internet rather than people who just, you know, who talk about it but aren't really about it.
I'm taking it as the people that just, because I was going to say, and I think you probably feel the same way. I feel like I wish there was a way to somehow regulate it where you have to not only have experience training real people in person, but doing it for a period of time and getting some kind of measurable results. Because just saying, oh, I've been a trainer for 20 years, like, you could suck for 20 years. Yeah. It doesn't matter. My dad goes, he was on my podcast actually right now as we're filming this, but like, he was a state trooper, and that was his big thing, was all these people that wanted promotions and raises because they've been with the state police for 10 years. And he would be like, but you've sucked for 10 years. Your record, you haven't produced, you're just here. You've done the bare minimum for 10 years. So it doesn't mean you deserve a promotion and a raise. So if there was a way that you have to train real people in person for still, I think experience clearly matters, But during those years of experience, you have to grow, get better, get measurable results with clients. And then if you reach some like minimum, okay, now you are qualified, you could go, you're allowed to go online and give advice and charge people to train them. Because right now, anybody, my wife, my mom could go online and say, I do online programming. You know, it's just weird, it's insane. What other industry is like that?
Yeah, it's such a weird thing too, where like, you could imagine, like, back in the day, you have some high school kid, hey, film my bench press, I want to show my buddy. Now it's like, hey, film my bench press, puts it on YouTube. A week later, hey, I'm an online coach.
Yes.
I got 25 people in a group, and then it's just like ridiculous.
Yeah,
the
barrier of entry is so low that, and it's a weird, maybe it's, I don't want to say a generational thing, because I think by definition I'm a millennial as well, but some cultural, psychological difference. When I was 22 and came here for the first time, I had been coaching since I was 19. I'd been coaching high school football and track. I'd been lifting since I was 14. I was pretty fucking strong.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And it would have never even crossed my mind to make videos at that point, how to do it.
Yeah.
And so that's what like blows my mind about some of these people out there doing online coaching and all this shit is like, one, why did they ever think their opinion was worth sharing?
Great like, what, I what wish I had an answer to that, I'll tell you, because... But that's what separates guys like you, because at the time you probably were more knowledgeable than 99% of the people, especially your age. Or if you look at the 22-year-old online coaches right now, you were stronger, you had more experience. I just remember of the guys that were coming in at that time, you know, but you were very, it's almost like respect your elders. I'm the same way.
Yeah.
I've been in it longer. Because I remember you were the first guy to probably come in that, I'm not saying you knew everything, because I certainly didn't and I still don't, but you didn't need much coaching. Like most people would come and they never squatted before and I would teach them the basics. You clearly had trained before, you squatted, you knew all the implements, it was more maybe the experience of being there and you know, hopefully you picked up a thing or two, but it wasn't like...
That's like how nuanced, I was concerned about learning something very small.
Yes.
Yeah.
Getting like one tiny, and besides just the experience of it, but like one tiny takeaway, like I didn't need to learn how to squat.
People need to learn that from someone like you who was at that time way more qualified than most of the online coaches now, but still had that mentality of, I'm young, I got a lot to learn. Before I go start teaching the world, let me get this shit down a little bit better myself. Yeah. But people now, it's like if you're good looking, you have abs.
Yeah.
You take your shirt off, you film yourself eating breakfast, and you have a million Instagram followers.
And maybe that's
and
why.
You're an authority.
Because I don't have abs. I'm obviously good looking. I mean, if that was the only basis, then
I wish there. You know, it's like to me, it would be absurd, ridiculous, and criminal for, you know, me to buy a white jacket and call myself a doctor and start doing open heart surgery. Like you would,
yeah, I'm pretty sure that's
absurd.
A crime. Yeah,
that would
a crime.
Be a crime. But how come somebody can come into our world and just say, "Oh, I'll train you. Yeah, I'm an online coach.
Sure.
Grab that barbell. Let's go."
It's funny because I mean, you wouldn't know this, but you have to have a license to be a hairdresser, right? But you don't have to be licensed to be.
I did have hair at one part. Yeah. But even that's a great point. That's
it's just
a
great funny. Part. It's like, I mean, that's not even, you know, like, what's the worst? You end up with a bad haircut. I mean,
yeah.
There was an interview, I think, with maybe with Vereshansky. And very long interview, it was probably to be 7-8 years ago it came out, and he talked about the Soviet, you know, coaching education, and he used that exact example.
Oh, really?
He said, in America, you know, you must have a certification for haircut.
Did use that exactly.
And then he was talking about how he had a 4-year degree to be a coach.
Yeah,
like the prerequisites. The general ed part and his sport education part was basically what our degree would have, what someone would have gotten their kinesiology, but what their upper level coursework would have been. all the anatomy, physiology, all that stuff was his foundation.
Yep.
And then the next 2 years of it were, all right, now you're just going to learn how to coach this one sport.
Yes. Yeah.
Same like Chinese weightlifting, right, is extremely high education requirements. And
I know the Russian stuff, like the foundation of the course is like almost like a pre-med kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And you basically decide at some point after that, are you going to be a doctor or are you going to be a coach? You know, I don't know how good Russian doctors are.
they're not, not as renowned as their coaches.
But the scary thing is, like, to your point, and there's different levels. Like, we're not going to do as much damage as somebody, you know, faking being an open heart surgeon.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But in our world, you can physically hurt somebody.
Yeah. You're gonna get some.
Like you said, a bad haircut. It's just a bad haircut. It grows back.
Yeah.
But in our world, I mean, you could do some major damage that could literally, I'm not trying to be over dramatic, but alter someone's life if the injury is bad enough.
Yeah, for sure.
That could be something that sticks with them where they're in pain or they need multiple surgeries for the rest of their life. I just wish there was a better way. You know, hopefully in our lifetime we'll see it. But it's crazy because people ask me all the time, like, you know, how do you become a coach? They think we have certifications out there, but as we know, 99.9% of them are bullshit. Even that, there's no regulations on. Anybody could call their online course a certification.
You can charge a lot more money when it's called a certification.
We joke about that all the
seminar.
Time. Take your seminar, cross the word out, call it certification, and charge $1,000 more.
Yeah. Segue. Yes, that's what we call in the podcasting business, a segue.
Very smooth.
Yeah.
Very
so smooth. You have the certified physical preparation specialist.
Yes. Which isn't one of the bullshit certifications. 40 years of experience in that one.
So is you and Smitty?
Yes.
James Smith. You know, we were talking about our other James Smith friend before, but the distinction.
Very common name.
Yeah, the Diesel Crew. I know it's not that anymore.
Diesel Strength and Conditioning is now.
So Smitty, we'll just call him Smitty. So you guys do this. Tell us about this and then kind of the new, you know, the evolution of that, why you guys created it, and then the new stuff you've been adding to it.
Yeah, I have a bunch of different products out now that I've been in this industry for well over 20 years doing this professionally. And I will say none of my products ever, they weren't like I sat down and said, I need some extra income. I need to create a product. What should I do? It's always kind of out of necessity. I'll check my email, my DMs, you know, clients that I'm training in person. And you just kind of, when the same questions keep popping up, the same problems you're solving every day, that's why the combine tape was my first product. It was because I was training a lot of football players. They started to go to these combines, which became more important. They didn't know how to do any of the tests, and I was 99 out of 100 emails was, what's the best stance for the 40-yard dash? How do I jump higher? So
when the Nike camps were really big.
That
was like my recruiting experience was that same time.
Kids were getting, and I had some, you know, there were kids that just weren't good at football that were getting D1 full rides solely on a fast 40-yard dash time at a high school combine. Mm-hmm. It was crazy. But so they've always come out of necessity. And Smitty and I, we had become friends, meeting each other, you know, having, just being in this kind of inner circle. We'd see each other at seminars and events, and we developed a friendship, and we got to talking one day. We were talking about YouTube, how I first discovered him because he was like the grip guy. He did a lot of this off-the-wall strongman training and grip training. And when I started training more high school wrestlers and I was looking for more information on that, his name kept popping up. So I knew him as like the crazy grip guy. He knew me as like the NFL combine football training guy, yet I don't know how we got on the conversation, but one day we're talking about our YouTube channels, and at that time, I did a video in my apartment rolling. I was doing glute release with a lacrosse ball, like sitting on the lacrosse ball, rolling my ass out with the lacrosse ball, and it had like 100,000. It was like the first video I had that had over 100,000 views.
People love mobility shit.
You know what? Because I think it makes people feel better. If someone who's having low back pain, they tried it and they go, oh my god, that helped a little bit. And so he goes, it's crazy. All the cool kind of crazy feats of strength I've posted over the years, I just did a pre-bench shoulder warm-up video that was 2 minutes long. He showed a couple rotator cuff exercises and like a couple pec stretches. And he goes, man, like it's got more views than the last 10 videos I've done. So he said, why don't we do like a warm-up slash mobility product? It's kind of not a sexy, exciting topic. Everybody wants the performance end, but everybody should at least be warming up and focusing on this. So we did our first product together, which was Amped warm-up DVD and manual. And it sold in like 50 different countries. It just blew up with not a ton of marketing. We just filmed it. And we knew it was a great product, but we're almost surprised at how well it did. And that just led into, we took it like an actual workout where you warm up, then you do your main strength or power movement. And then we had a strength DVD, and then our extreme DVD was all about accessory movements. And you know, then we had a speed DVD for more specific, sport-specific speed, and then a core training DVD. So it almost like followed the progression of what a workout would follow. Yeah. And then next thing you knew, we had almost this curriculum of courses that did really, really well. And it was one of those things where we started having trainers and coaches asking us, why don't you guys, you know, I want to get certified because I want to have some credentials to add some validity to what I do, again, to our point of there's not really anything out there. So a lot of people were coming to us saying they didn't like the curriculum, or they were certified by some of these organizations that they felt like they either didn't learn anything or they had to de-learn everything that they knew was right just to kind of pass the test, but then they didn't use that knowledge in the real world. So it came up probably for about 5 years when we were finally like, there seems to be a huge demand. People are asking for this. Why don't we put a curriculum together kind of based on all those DVDs? We have 40 years combined experience. We were both certified in everything. I had the CSCS, NSCA, NASM Advanced Personal Trainer Cert. I had all of those. And we kind of sat down and said, what's the missing link with a lot of those? And for me, to sum it up simply, I just felt like none of them were practical. Like, yeah, it's just, the NASM was very, it's, if you want to get a little better with anatomy and biomechanics, it was good for that. But then it's like, all right, I go to the gym on Monday and an athlete walks in. I still don't know what the hell to do with them.
Yeah,
like,
that's a complaint we see a lot with people coming through, you know, the university programs and it's like they teach you all these things about training, but they don't teach you how to train. They don't teach you how to coach.
Yes.
And
like the coaching part is massively left out in certifications. So that's, we said, let's teach people how to properly teach the lifts and how to set up properly and biomechanics and how to warm up properly. And we'll throw in some speed and plyos for the coaches that are training athletes. But let's add in the program design component. What do you do with all this information?
Yeah.
But not, we also pride ourselves on, we don't give you like a cookie cutter, here's the DeFranco Smitty model. And it's more of a template and more guidelines, rules to follow. And then you plug it in based on your athletes, your clients, your situation. We also go into a little bit of psychology and coaching, you know, coaching cues. How do you talk with a client when they walk in? How do you command the room? So you're not one of those really smart trainers who knows a lot, but nobody's going to listen to you because you don't know how to communicate your information in a simple, practical manner for a mom that walks into your gym. So we added in all those components, and we feel like created as comprehensive as of a course as you could have. It's warm up, strength training, plyos, mobility, everything from diaphragmatic breathing and recovery work to high level speed, plyos, power development, program design, sports psychology, everything in between. It's pretty comprehensive. It's like 40 years of our best stuff you get eight manuals, eight DVDs. There's a curriculum that we send you the materials beforehand. So we're attracting a little bit more of a high level coach that is going to dedicate their time. And most of them have successful businesses already, and they just want to kind of get to that next level. We also get some new up and coming coaches, but definitely a more serious group, and we limit it to 20. We have had a couple with like 30 coaches, but it's not, you know, 100 people, 1,000 people in an auditorium. It's hands-on, intense, 8 in the morning till 6 at night. We haven't taken a lunch break on the last 2 years of certs. It's straight through, and it's cool because it's changing people's lives. I get text messages from coaches saying, you know, I bought my first house after implementing this. My business exploded, and now I have a real legit business because of you guys kind of putting the pieces together for me. I think that's the thing we're most proud of is you leave there after that weekend, and on Monday morning when you go to work, you're actually a better coach. You're not just somebody with a whole bunch of information that you still don't know what the hell to do with it, you know? So that's a big priority and a big piece of the DeFranco brand right now is continuing to keep that cert updated, and we offer it online and in person. So there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes just to offer, you know, 4 or 5 in-person courses each year and a couple online courses.
That's awesome, man. I mean, we definitely appreciate the commitment to being more principle-based and descriptive rather than prescriptive with all that stuff. And it sounds like you're doing a really good job of kind of conquering this idea, which I've always found to be a tough thing as we try and educate people through the internet, is creating, you know, the sort of prerequisite and progressive type of model to the learning. Because, you know, if you go on our YouTube channel or something like that, or a website, you know, 1,500 articles and 1,000 videos and stuff, there's stuff that's written for beginners and there's stuff that's written for advanced. And as a content creator, I've found myself a lot of times writing articles or making videos with the definite incorrect assumption that when someone reads this article, they've already read all the other ones I wrote before this.
Yes, I made the same mistake. You haven't read everything I've ever written? What's wrong with you?
And I'm always surprised, you know, when I do powerlifting clinics and stuff is, you know, all right, who's watched this video? And like a third of the people raised their hands. Yeah. I'm like, you guys know that you could have just watched all the videos and gotten twice the information that I'm going to tell you today.
It's crazy.
Because there's, you know, 20 hours of videos and I've only got 6 hours today. Yep. But yeah, so being able to take people from, you know, the 101 version all the way through in the prerequisite stuff that you're giving them with that curriculum and then through the weekend sounds really awesome.
Because there's only so much you could learn in a weekend. Yeah. So we tried to make that very clear, and that's why we did it the way we did it. There, it is our full DVD series. I think it's 7 or 8 DVDs, a physical manual to go with each one. You have to, that's part of the curriculum when you sign up. And that's why we even take the, if we're gonna offer a course in January, you need to sign up at least a month ahead of time, because our goal is for, and the prerequisite is, you get that information, you go through it all. We're not saying you have to retain every bit of it. Yeah. That's why you're coming to the cert. Then we're gonna help you understand it a little bit better and put it all together, but you're not coming in cold. And we almost wanna scare some people away. Like if you're not 100% dedicated, or you're one of those that just wants a weekend certification, you're gonna go online and be like, I gotta go through 8 DVDs and I gotta read 8 books before I could take this course. Screw that. So I guess there's always gonna be a couple slip through the cracks, but I my goal, the integrity that I have in Smitty, that if you see a coach and then after his name, he writes CPPS letters, not saying they're all the greatest coaches in the world, but we want that to have some kind of a respect where you know what, that's he or she is definitely a higher level trainer than your average person out there. Like that's the goal. Well, we want it to mean something.
It's much more of your personal stamp of approval.
Yes.
Right. You know, it'd be one thing even if you were the director of the NSCA or something. You know, I don't think that person has seen everyone with a CSCS and being like, this guy coached a shitty squat. That's on me.
Yes.
Yeah, that's not fucking on him. It's too big.
We
it's
still care control. Enough that, and there's not enough of that. Like, I say that. Like, we're both upfront with that. We say you're all a reflection on us. Yeah. Like, we want you to do good. It makes me look bad now, especially I just said that. So now if you're at your gym and you see this CPPS coach that's looking at his phone while their client is squatting horribly, I don't want that, because that's going to make me look awful. So we do. we put a lot of time and energy to do the best we can. Like I said, I can't guarantee once you start getting bigger and certifying thousands of coaches, but we're doing a pretty damn good job of making sure that we have as few slip through the cracks as possible by having some kind of barrier of entry that you don't just, as long as you pay your money, you get certified. Like, no, you got to do some work in order to get those letters after your name.
That's impressive. That's a great structure. I mean, I'm glad that is actually something that exists, you know?
Well, and even when you leave and I'll get off, I don't want to do the whole podcast on our cert, but that you don't leave the weekend with your certification. You get all the DVDs.
That's cool.
And you prepare ahead of time, then you go through the weekend, and then the test, it's part of the test is online, a multiple choice, but then the bigger portion is you have to get somebody to record you coaching. We have a whole bunch of,
cool.
You have to coach the squat, deadlift, bench, you have to coach a 10-yard sprint. There's some more athletic stuff you have to coach, and we're grading you on the coaching cues, the technique, and it's again, that we wanted that aspect of making better coaches, not just, hey, I could read and regurgitate a bunch of information. We want to know that you could take this information, go out on the gym floor and apply it and be a good coach that could think on your feet, and we want to see how you handle certain situations, because as you know, you could teach the squat as good as anybody and you could be the greatest coach, and then you get in here and you give all your cues and then that person sits down and looks nothing like you coached. Now what do you do when you say sit back and they can't hip hinge? You know, what's your next step? Like, being able to think on your feet and problem solve is a huge part of that. And so we try to incorporate that into the testing and the grading system as well. So big practical application portion of our test before you get certified.
That's awesome.
Nice. Well, let's take another quick break, and then we'll be back with a little bit more from Joe DeFranco, and then wrap things up for this episode of The Jug Life.
Does your business have any New Year's resolutions? Here's an important one every business should consider. Make your hiring process more efficient and effective this year. Let ZipRecruiter help. No one has done a better job of transforming how you find the right talent than they have. ZipRecruiter posts your jobs to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. Then ZipRecruiter actively looks for the most qualified candidates and invites them to apply. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you, it finds them. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/JugLife. That's ZipRecruiter.com/JugLife. One more time, try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/JugLife.
All right, so we're back on The Jug Life with Joe DeFranco. As we've been talking about, huge influence on me and the start of Juggernaut, and probably the biggest influence was the program, the West Side for Skinny Bastards program. And I ignored the part where it said Skinny Bastards. I figured I could still do this program anyways. And that was probably the real basis of my own training from about age 19 to 22, 23. And then certainly the basis of the programming I used early in my high school football coaching career with the athletes there. Worked great, very easy to understand, that combined with reading all the articles on the West Side Barbell website, which I did read them all. Some people like to be like, oh, just talk shit about it. You never fucking read it. No, I read it. All right. However well you think you understand it, person on the internet, I understand it better.
You need to understand. You need to understand something before you should anyway talk shit on it.
Yeah. So, I remember, the original program, 2, 3, how many parts?
I think 7, it went to 4. Maybe.
4?
Yeah.
Right. Oh, shit.
All right. So as that program evolved and really your thinking about training evolved, are there things, you know, what's something that as you look back at Storage Closet DeFranco's gym, and you just think to yourself, like, what the fuck were you doing?
Yeah.
Really changed your thinking on.
The reason why I called it West Side for Skinny Bastards, it wasn't because I would catch shit of like trying to like basically use the name to get more eyeballs on it. I did it as a respect thing. And by the way, it was a free program. I would never sell any product with that, the name West Side on it. I just wouldn't. I'm not that dumb.
Like two days ago, not to go off on a tangent on this, I saw that they had posted that they had trademarked Conjugate Method.
I saw that too.
There's a lot of people upset.
Big
about
uproar
that.
Over yeah. that. I saw that. I didn't get to read all the comments, but they try and hit
me a couple times in articles with like, oh, dynamic effort method and max effort method. That's trademarked. You can't say it in an article. And I was like, well, the article's free, and I know how this shit works.
I may have even gotten one for the West Side year or two ago, and I'm like, nobody was a bigger advocate. That was just a respect thing of me saying, I'm borrowing a lot of. The things I know a lot of it, like Louis doesn't even claim to have invented, but I read them first from him. So I was just kind of paying homage, like, hey, I learned this from this guy. So if this program I have, if it looks similar to any other program, somebody might look at it and say, yeah, that's kind of like a West Side split. Yeah. So that was just a respect thing. Hey, I learned a lot from this guy.
It was more
I
like,
added a couple tweaks.
Yeah, more
that's
like,
why I'm naming
you're welcome
it.
For the free traffic, guys.
So it's just weird to me how people took it the exact opposite. Yeah. Like, you're trying to capitalize on that name. No, you know, you never, the whole, like, if you don't train at West Side, you're not West Side. I go, I'm not trying to be. I'm not, you know what I mean? Like, it's not, if you know me, you know that's not my gimmick. Like, I don't give a shit about that. It was just a respect thing. But even with that, you know, me saying, hey, I borrowed a lot from them, and I put my own spin on it by adding some more unilateral work. And you know, eventually we took out the dynamic effort squatting or deadlifting, the speed deadlifts, and did more jumping and sprints. That was probably the biggest mistake I made, was even though I tweaked it from day one, it wasn't enough. Like, I was following it a little too closely from what I thought the West Side split was. Mm. Where, like, one of the biggest mistakes was definitely having young high school, like, weaker, skinny kids squat twice a week, and having a dynamic day and a max effort day was way too much. They weren't ready for it. They didn't need it. You know, having a kid squat heavy on Monday and then doing, like, dynamic effort barbell box squats with bands on Thursday, like, it was just destroying. Thankfully, nobody ever got hurt. But kids would start saying, like, man, my low back is tight. This hurts a little bit. Like, my legs are killing me from Monday's workout, and now you're making me do these 10 sets of two dynamic effort, you know, squats. So I followed it a little too closely and needed to listen to my instincts a little more, which thankfully I could say didn't take long. It was maybe a couple months max where I started saying, I'm not going to put a barbell on their back twice a week. They don't have to do dynamic effort box squats. Like, we could do box jumps instead. I think the biggest thing that I took from it, just being a meathead who always loved training, and to this day, whether whether it's a West Side style program or not, when you train athletes need power is the number one quality. They need both strength and speed, force and velocity. West Side opened up my eyes, and I know it sounds like remedial now, but as a 18, 19-year-old kid, I just went to the weight room to lift, you know, and every day was kind of the same. It was, you just lifted as heavy as you can. You know, one day I did chest, one day I did back, one day I did legs, and I just lifted heavy on everything. That at least got me thinking more along the terms of strength and speed, force and velocity, athletes, and then you start thinking, oh yeah, I have some friends that are really strong, but they suck. Like, they're unathletic, they're slow. And then I have like a lot of little quick skinny friends, but you touch them and they fall over. Like, that combination is generally what almost every single athlete needs. So whether you want to split it up the way Louis splits it up, or you want to, you know, you're going to get your dynamic work via med ball throws, sprints, jumps, it doesn't matter. Like, to this day, every athlete that comes in here, we're still addressing force and velocity. But now we've taken a little bit more of an intelligent approach where we're doing things more like a force velocity profiling, where we could get a profile on an athlete and see what they need more of,
yeah,
and then focus the programming on that rather than saying, you know, two max effort days, two dynamic effort days for both upper and lower body, and we're doing that for everybody. We still generally have dynamic effort days, max effort days. I still like that terminology. I just feel like it's a simple way to organize things. But we do it specifically geared towards each athlete, not just a basic template. Which another misconception is, people think if you came to DeFranco's, you did West Side for Skinny Bastards. I wrote that article. I still think it's a great program, especially for like high school, college kids. But that it's we evaluated every athlete from day one, even in my storage closet days. There were tweaks to that program, and or people that came in and did something completely different because they could only train with me once or twice a week, yeah, so I had to do full body workouts or whatever it may be. I just want to make sure people don't think like that was our program. That was a general program I wrote that I felt helped a lot of misguided high school kids who would walk into the weight room and just look around and pick something. That gave them some structure, mm-hmm, which was way better than what most of them were doing, but certainly not the only thing we did, like not even close.
The as you look, particularly with the training of athletes and speed training, have you changed sort of thinking as far as a proportion of field-based work compared to weight room work, how that sort of transfers over to on-field performance?
Yeah, especially Cameron's doing a lot more of the field-based work. And the fact that another thing that people don't talk about is just sometimes you're not in a perfect, like, you don't have space.
Yeah, the logistics of it.
Yeah, like, I was in a storage closet, so it's not that I was anti-speed guy.
Yeah.
I just didn't have anywhere to run, so
can't,
I didn't.
Can't do a lot of sprints in there.
Yeah, it's tough to run sprints in a 500-square-foot storage closet. So that was another, like, misconception. Like, DeFranco's just a strength guy. He doesn't believe in sprints. Like, I wouldn't have been able to train athletes for 20 years if you know, that was my thinking. The videos I posted were the things I was doing in that storage closet. But, definitely, generally speaking, more field-based work. But again, I think it's dependent on, the answer is it depends on the athlete, mm-hmm, what they need more of. I find with pro athletes, like a lot of the NFL guys, if I get an NFL veteran, they come in here in February, the last thing they want to do is go out in the field and do more football. Like, their technical skill is the best in the world. Not that they don't need to still work on it and keep those, you know, skills sharp, but it's almost like what people, the general public doesn't realize, but guys like you realize, is the more advanced the athlete, sometimes like the more general the training, because a lot of them skipped over.
Yeah.
Just like a lot of, especially like NFL linemen are unfit people. Like they're very, it's always amazes me because I'll watch them on the field. I'll go to a practice or a game and like their skill level is so high, yet they get blown up like doing a 10-minute dynamic warm-up, or you know, a lineman that can't bench 315 and he's an NFL lineman throwing people around on the field, but he doesn't have that base level of strength and just aerobic fitness in the gym. So I almost find myself with some advanced professional athletes doing what the public would look at and say, holy shit, like Joe's program is as basic, like I've done this program with a high school kid, or you know, this just looks like something I would see at any regular gym, but that's what they need. I've been in this long enough now where I'm not trying to do cool exercises to look good on the internet. Like, every now and then we bust those out if I feel the need for like a special strength exercise as the season gets closer. There might be some shit that looks cool to the public, but our goal is to get athletes better.
Right.
If what you need is general physical preparedness, I'm going to do basic shit with you and help you raise that up. If you need specific, maybe some more fancy shit, we'll do that. But it all depends on the athlete.
Yeah, and I think people too get things like machine training even were so devalued and looked down upon for a long time. It's like, is a running back going to be, you know, an NFL running back going to become a better running back because his bench press went up 10 pounds, especially if he's already really fucking strong?
Yes.
The amount of energy it takes to do that, not really worth it when that takes away energy from yes. more important things, you know, practicing football, sprinting, jumping, stuff that, yep. you know, looks more like football.
Yeah.
So it's like, does he need to do this very high stress activity, or can he do the fucking chest press machine yeah. and get some general strength stimulus so he doesn't lose any muscle there? Like, it almost, you know, works back, like, the other side of that bell curve, the yes. very far advanced side, gets back to almost more basic-looking stuff.
Without a doubt. And that's why I always laugh, like, the internet arguing over stuff like that, because you'll have the yeah. coach that's like, no, you're a pussy if you use machines. I get my guys strong, and we get after it. I don't care what level they're at. And then you'll have that argument. And they're both arguing it, and they're probably both right, because I also have a Brian Cushing, who I've been training forever. Just mentally, his strength on the field is his strength and yeah. his toughness. He likes to lift weights. He likes to be one of the strongest guys on the field. Like, that's his thing, you know. So for him, if the last 5 years, if it was just like, we're just going to do some chest press, we're going to take it real easy, whether you could argue you think that might even be better for him and you know, yeah. for him to have some energy reserved for other things. Mentally, I know what it would do to him mentally, and that way outweighs whatever physical benefits maybe he would have gotten from, you know, cutting back a little bit. So, again, it just goes back to, I know it's not people like to have definitive answers. They want, are you the high-intensity guy? Are you the Olympic weightlifting guy or the powerlifting guy? Like, everybody wants to be put into these groups and these categories, but the answer 99.9% of the time is it depends. This guy likes to lift heavy and get after it. This guy likes to do fucking power cleans. This guy hates power cleans. You know, this guy does box jumps. He rather do snatches. Like, it's when you actually really train real people, real humans, you get that experience where, you know, everybody's going to be different. The first thing when you have to get them in your gym, we sit down and we fucking talk for at least 30 to 60 minutes. I want to know, what have you done that you feel worked good for you? What are some non-negotiable in your head? And I'm talking about pro athletes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what got you to the dance. Now, you're coming to me because I'm supposed to be professional and I'm supposed to know more in this world than you. So I'm going to give you my opinion of what I feel you might change. But I also want to know psychologically what exercises you feel like, hey, they really helped me. I got to keep those in there. And that's important, and I don't think enough people in our field do that because it's too big of an ego. They want you to walk in your gym and tell you everything you've done is fucking wrong. You don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, a guy's been in the NFL 10 years. He made $50 million. And us, the people who couldn't make it to that level, are going to tell him, you don't know what the fuck you're doing. Now I'm here to, you know, tell you how stupid you were for the last 20 years. It's just, it's not right. You know?
That buy-in is huge, too.
Yes.
I think people sort of underplay that, like, getting someone to do something that they believe is their idea or, you know, something that they like, whether it's the most, you know, logical choice is kind of irrelevant because the buy-in kind of supersedes all that anyways, right?
100%. In our world, we'll split hairs over what's better, Olympic weightlifting or powerlifting for an athlete. Meanwhile, I agree with you 100%. Whatever one they believe in more, we could sit here and argue.
Yeah.
And maybe if there is one in that situation that's 2% better than the other, that's not as valuable as that fucking athlete believing in what he's doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd rather him give the wrong approach 110% than the right approach that's going to get him the 2% better, but he's going into the gym and he hates it.
Yeah.
Or he's bored out of his mind. That's another big thing. Like, a lot of people will say, hey, you just need the basics. You don't need to get fancy. You don't need to rotate exercises that often. But there's just that psychological component of athletes being bored out of their mind and dreading coming to the gym each day, as opposed to making it a little bit fun and having them look forward to coming to the gym. And while they're working hard and making progress, if they like it and they buy into it, to me, there's more value in that than people give it.
For sure.
Joe, where can people follow you, learn more about you? Social media, websites, all that?
I post most of my stuff on Instagram. I'm at DeFranco's Gym, and my podcast comes out once a week on Thursdays. It's the Industrial Strength Show. Every Thursday is on iTunes, or you could listen on my actual website with show notes and links to all the important stuff we talked about at DeFranco'sTraining.com or DeFranco'sGym.com.
All right, so upcoming events for us. Friday, April 13th, we will have a Jug Life Live, so a free snatch clinic, and then Jug Life Live at Max's Gym, the always creatively named Max's Gym in Oakland,
I love that.
In Oakland, California. And then registration is now open for the 2018 Juggernaut Performance Summit. That is August 19th in Long Island. That is Max talking about developing weightlifting technique. Me talking about powerlifting program design and individualizing for different athletes at different levels. Dr. Mike talking nutrition. Dr. James Hoffman on recovery. And Dr. Quinn Hennock on movement, mobility, stability, all that good stuff. Last January, we did it. We had 250 attendees, people from 22 different states. There were people who flew to Long Island from Vancouver, Canada, Seattle, or Washington State, Nevada. So if you are one of the people inclined to be like, oh, it's a little too far, fuck you. So, you know, just get yourself there.
You know.
Yeah. So get yourself there. We're very excited about that. It is about as information a packed day as you could possibly have. So both of those can be signed. You can sign up for those in the events section of store.jtsstrength.com. If you're interested in online coaching for powerlifting, weightlifting, super total, powerbuilding, or strongman, check out juggernautcoaching.com. We have all kinds of different levels there. 3 YouTube videos a week, the podcast, plus 2 more informational tutorial technique lecture type of videos on the Juggernaut YouTube, handled by the world's strongest videographer, Shorty Sedang. And if you like the podcast, you can find the video version every Tuesday on YouTube. Also find us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and thejuglife.com. If you like it, go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review, write us something funny or nice, and maybe we'll read it on the air. Like Holding Me Closer, Tiny Dancer. I don't think that's his real name. Strong opinions, strong dudes, straightforward strength, sports news, history, education, and opinion pieces by the 2 most handsome personalities in the game. Well then.
I'm offended.
The Bulgarian bad boy, Max Montana, and the Jailhouse Strong original. Shout out to my original powerlifting coach, Josh Bryant. Chad Wesley Smith bring fact-based research, valuable interviews, and smooth voices straight to your earbuds. Okay. All opinions backed by reason, and more recently, craft beers to keep CWS in that thick Chippendale-ready condition. yeah, I should probably read these over a little better before I read them. Top fitness podcast with the best content and guests, always a delight and source of quality information. So Holding Me Close, Tiny Dancer, shoot me an email, chad@jtsstrength.com, and we'll get you out a shirt or a gift card or something like that.
That dude wanted
a shirt bad. Yeah, we have some very, some people really go above and beyond in their reviews, and we appreciate that. So go on iTunes, write us a, give us a 5-star review, write us something funny or nice, and maybe we'll read it on the air. Max, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram, max_Ada, or Facebook, or you can email me, max@jtsstrength.com.
And I'm Chad Wesley Smith, @ChadWesleySmith, and @JuggernautTraining on Facebook and Instagram, filling up your newsfeed all day. This was another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. Thank you very much to Joe DeFranco for joining us, and we'll see you next week.